FNR, Football Nation Radio. Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome everyone, streaming football 24-7. This is FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful, beautiful game of football. It is certainly a radio revolution and I'm proud to be part of it. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego and this is Football Extra, our daily football show with news and more. And you can join in the conversation anytime today and all our guests are getting these fantastic traditional premium packed Panettone from our great friends there at Ital. All you need to do with our guests getting Panettone's, our callers can also get Panettone's for the best caller. The talkback line is 9944 9999. That's 9944 9999. 03 in front of that if you're outside Victoria and +613 if you're overseas. You can SMS us also with your thoughts and comments, and you can also win yourself a Panettone. Just SMS us on 0428 933 345, 0428 933 345. And joining me today, as he does every Thursday, is Australian football legend Alan Davidson. Good morning to you, Dave.
G'day, Carlos. How are you?
Yeah, you're going to be walking home with a couple of Panettone's too.
Oh, really?
By the way, I know. Look, you're looking like you're losing a bit too much weight there, Dave. You need to fatten up a little bit, and these Panettone's will do it for you. So get one on the way out. Mate, I want to start with Timmy Cahill. I know that you've had a good relationship with Timmy over a number of years now. Obviously, he was a bit of a mentor to Jason when he was in the Socceroo camp, and he's a guy that is there for a lot of the younger players at different times. So you got to know him as a parent of Jason and in some of the Socceroo camps over the last couple of campaigns. He's leaving Melbourne City. The fact that he's leaving is not a surprise, but the timing of it's interesting given that he wants to play and he's leaving at a time where it's not going to be easy for him to get a club, whether it's here because of the transfer deadlines and the transfer window issues, and a club overseas. What are your thoughts about the fact that he's moving?
First thing, I got the utmost respect for Timmy. Tim, you know, we had a relationship during the World Cup and with the national team with Jason, and I had a lot of respect for his role he played with all the younger players and being a mentor and taking over, you know, giving them the right guidance. So with regards to him leaving Melbourne City and your comment that, you know, it's going to be tough for him, I think he wouldn't have any problems. I don't think he would have left Melbourne City unless he's had a contract tied up, ready to go. Mm. You know what I mean?
But so, you know, the transfer window's better than me. I mean, you can't go and join a club anywhere around the world until the transfer window in January.
Yes.
So there's a little bit of time.
End of December, yes.
End of December, yeah. So, okay, so it's only a couple of weeks then.
You're talking 31st of December and then he's free. So
sure, he might want a bit of a break with his family first and then go off. He can also be a guest player in the A-League for 13 games, but I'm not sure whether that's going to suit him because the whole idea is obviously to play as close to the announcement of the squad as possible. The big issue with A-League players, with the A-League Grand Final being May the 7th, the World Cup starts in mid-June, so you probably want to be able to. And by the way, there's only two teams playing in that grand final, so it, depending on what team you're playing for, you could be not playing for 3 or 4 weeks even before that. You might be finished by, you know, mid-April or at the start of April. So there could be 2 months without game time for some of these guys. So you'll probably want to join a league that can take you almost up to when the squad is announced, maybe halfway through May or something like that.
You know, all these scenarios, I'm sure Timmy's not a fool. Mm. Timmy's been in the business for a very long time and he's been, you know, at the top of the tree. So I think Timmy knows what he's doing, and I think obviously, you know, we don't know obviously what he's doing at this stage, but I think he's pretty sure on what he's doing, and he's got it all mapped out, and it'll probably unveil, you know, once he's ready to unveil it all. But, you know, with regards to playing, I understand that he needs to play. And if he's not playing regularly at Melbourne City, well, you know, there's a chance. And, you know, there's other – I think Timmy's I think Timmy and all footballers try to set records and try to do the, you know, try to, you know, I guess stamp their legacy in some ways. And, you know, if Timmy makes another World Cup, you know, I believe that he goes into a very elite group of players playing four World Cups. So, you know, there's a lot
of... And scoring, possibly scoring at four World Cups too.
Absolutely. Mm. So, you know, there's... There's a lot of other things that, apart from playing, he wants to play and everyone wants to play. I was a footballer. I wanted to play. If you're not playing, well, you go somewhere where you're going to play.
Mm.
And obviously with regards to the World Cup as well, that, you know, he wants to go to the World Cup. He's been a great ambassador for Australia. He's been great when we needed him. He's been the key player to score those important goals to get us over the line. So obviously he wants to go to the World Cup, and I understand that as well. So he's putting everything he can in the right direction so he can play in the World Cup, and that means he's got to play regularly. And you know I'm sure he's on a good wicket at Melbourne City.
Mm.
And for him, it's not about money, it's about playing. So this is a great story in its own, where you a lot of people think about the money side of it. You know, it's not about money, it's about playing, and the money will come.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, if Timmy gets any criticism at all, it's around the fact that he's a commercial operation, isn't he? Like, he does have, you know, the sponsorship. He's had the sponsorship for a long time. It's always big sponsorship. He's actually done very, very well to have a global brand. Everyone knows him from around the world. Apparently, I was talking to some journos who went to the World Cup draw the other night, and journos from Peru were there, and journos from Denmark, not so much France, but those two journos, when they were asking the Australian journos about the Australian team, the only player they recognised was Tim Cahill. So he's a name that's probably known throughout the world for his exploits with Everton, with the exploits with the Socceroos at a World Cup, some of the goals he scored. People know the name Tim Cahill, and he's been able to cash in on that at different times. But I don't have a problem when someone delivers the way he does every time. You know that his football comes first, the commerciality comes second. Do you think it's unfair, some of the criticism he gets about the fact that it's all about Tim Cahill, it's all about him selling himself, it's all about him and the commercial life after football benefits he might receive with what he's doing by going to a fourth World Cup or doing what he does in the media the way he does it?
Not at all. I think if anyone was in his situation and he was a successful footballer and all these corporations want to come in and sponsor him, I don't think that anyone on earth would knock that back. I think it's balance, you know what I mean? He's a footballer first, and this is a great example of his forte in belief. You know, he wants to go to the World Cup, he wants to play in the World Cup, so he's cutting, you know, I was reading in the paper today that, you know, a multi-million dollar contract, if that's the case, well, you know, he's cutting that so he can play.
Mm.
So, and also that at the end of the career, you know, you're once you've retired, you're a long time out of football, and you know, obviously he's got a big family as well, and he's a very family oriented person. So he looks after his parents really well, his brothers really well, which I've seen personally, and obviously his wife and his kids, you know, so he's got a lot of mouths to feed and a lot of people to look after, and also these are all a part of his support team, you know. So you've got to understand the infrastructure of it all, and good luck to him. If he's making a lot of money, I think that's great because he had the opportunity. But you've got to remember also that he's had to earn that right. Big corporations just go and run after anyone. Do you know what I mean? They go after people who have earned that right, and he's earned that right. And I think good luck to him. And I don't know, in terms, you know, I'm sure there's times in his career where he's got the football business side of it, and then he's got the commercial business side that he has to weigh up, but he makes calculated decisions. But one thing I do know about Timmy, he's the ultimate professional footballer, totally committed to his football, looks after himself well, looks after his body well at his age. He's 37 or something like that now. Happy birthday for yesterday. I noticed it was his birthday. But in the same sense, he looks after himself very well. He's totally committed to his football. And these are all the benefits that come. And I think good luck to him.
So, Davo, tell me about something that the general public wouldn't know about Timmy Cahill with his interaction with some of the younger players or Australian players in the Socceroos squad. Some of the stuff he does for people, some of the stuff that people wouldn't know because he doesn't advertise it, but some of the players have benefited from his mentoring or his support in some way.
I just think through his experience, you know what I mean? When the last World Cup in Brazil, you know, I noticed that, you know, there was Jason, Matthew Leckie and all, it was quite a young squad. So there was a lot of young players and they were in there. And a lot of them, you know, had a handful of caps, you know what I mean? So, and Timmy, the most important thing that, you know, and also Mark Bresciano as well. I want to throw his name in there because he was the ultimate professional and mentor as well. You know, probably two different types of characters as well, because Mark was very quiet and introverted, you know what I mean? Didn't say much. But Timmy was quite out there, mixed with the boys. What I liked about Tim is he would just tell them straight and, you know, tell them what was expected and you can't do this, you can't do that, you've got to do this, you've got to look after your image, blah, blah, blah.
So what can you be more specific about the sort of stuff he was really telling these young boys about?
To be honest, I was listening secondhand through my son as well, and I was there watching him. I just watched how he interacted. Like, he was a big name player I've seen and I've heard, you know, even back in that old golden generation, a lot of them wouldn't really mix well with the youngsters. And I know that firsthand through my own son's experience, you know what I mean? But Timmy, and to give you an example, Timmy made him feel welcome straight away. He's the one who goes, walks up, puts his arm around him and say, listen, how are you? Welcome to the national team, Ken.
Yeah.
Where some of them, you know, you've got to earn your stripes and you've got to earn your respect, and only then that's when they'll talk to you and mix with you. So for a youngster, that's a big thing, you know what I mean, to have someone with Timmy Cahill's status and making you feel comfortable, because when you're in camp, you're nervous, you've got all these big names with you, and Timmy's the first one who comes up and introduces himself to you, and, you know, if you've got anything you need or you've got any problems, come and see me. If you've got any problems or any questions, you know, I'll help you out, that sort of stuff. So that's a big thing, I think. And being a parent, that's a big thing, because the real important issue here was he's giving him the right information, which is good as well. So sometimes you get mentors and, you know, it's not the right information. And he's got a level – and what I like about Tim, he's got a level head on him. He's a smart thinker. And at the same time, he's a good footballer. He's lived a life and he's been successful in his life. So you want mentors like that.
Yeah. Is there a danger at all where some of these young guys – and it's a bit of a bubble they live in, isn't it? Like, it's not like they walk in public every day and they get influenced by people around them who are just normal people. They deal with high-profile footballers all the time, and they're playing against high-profile footballers. And a lot of the younger guys use either players they play against or players within their squad as heroes. I mean, there's one thing about being a mentor, but sometimes these guys become heroes. And when a young player who's Australian plays with Timmy Cahill, and Timmy's wealthy, he's successful, you know, he's out there in the media, is there a danger that some of these younger players might get ahead of themselves and want to be a Timmy Cahill before they've earned it?
I think maybe subconsciously they might fall into that trap, but it's a pretty ruthless industry anyway. And there's a lot of levelers. This is all about performing on the field. And if you get carried away off the field, well, you'll get pulled into line pretty quick. But, there's nothing wrong with having these heroes and looking up to these heroes. And it's really nice when these heroes come down and make you welcome, and I don't think you know Timmy was a hero in a lot of these kids' eyes, but at the same time, you know, Timmy was hard on the kids as well, you know what I mean? Like, he was a good mentor, and he was hard on them, and there was expectations, and he would, you know, probably explain these expectations because of this, and this. You have to do this, and this. That's it, simple. You know what I mean? Or we're not going to do this, or, you know, you need to quieten down or whatever, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, these are all the things that I thought were good. Mark Bresciano was very quiet. He didn't say much, but when he spoke, everyone listened.
Yeah, it's true. And he's playing in Italy, the length of time he played in Italy, you'd think that the ups and downs he would have experienced there and still played regularly whatever club he was at. is a real achievement too. Tell us, this is a big question and without notice. Is Tim Cahill now the best Socceroo ever? This is a question without notice, Dave. I know I'm throwing you under the bus here. Is he the best Socceroo ever now? Can we now finally put that one to bed?
I think with regards to achievement, he has to be he has to be up there in the top two. Who's the other, you know, like...
Because I'm talking about Socceroo, not best Australian player, because then we can talk technique and what people have done across leagues and things. But the best Socceroo, and we're talking about the guy who has... flourished in clutch moments for Australia in big, big games. Is there anyone that comes close to what he's done?
Well, for me, I look at all these sort of questions and there's got to be a criteria. How do you make this judgment?
Okay, my criteria is...
I know what the question is. But for me, the criteria is, you know, I look at Timmy Cahill as a great mentor for the young ones. That doesn't even come on the picture.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
But there are probably other Socceroos like Paul Wade would have maybe been the same. You may have been the same by way of being a mentor, but by way of performance.
Yeah, by performance, you know, Timmy Cahill still playing at 37 for the national team, fourth World Cup. That pretty much says it all, you know. And in terms of big games and someone who, you know, there was a lot of players that, you know, played well against Fiji. But, you know what I mean, and best on ground against Fiji. But at the end of the day, he's doing it on the world stage. And when we need him and we need that goal, he's the one, and just recently, he's the one that come on and scored two goals and got us over the line again. I think he is.
Yeah, because you look at it.
I got it. You know, like, there's a lot of big names, and there's, you know, like, yeah. You know, when you talk about the best players ever, first two names come to my mind are probably Harry Kewell and Mark Viduka.
Yep.
Straight off the bat, Mark Schwarzer. Mm. You know what I mean? Achievements.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, but if you look at Mark Viduka, it's no question how good a player Mark Viduka was. In fact, Mark Viduka, as far as you put the characteristics and qualities of Mark Viduka as a player compared to Tim Cahill, there's no decision to be made. Mark Viduka as a player all round is much better than Tim Cahill. No question. As far as if you talk about technique, you talk about playing in different leagues and doing what he's done in different leagues, in my view, as a player and only as a player, and just say there's no names and just looking at two players and someone said, which one's a better player? Mark Viduka, hands down, the better player. But as far as achieving for the Socceroos, and I think ultimately it has to be games in World Cups, doesn't it?
Well, if the Socceroos are the criteria, that's the measurement.
Yeah.
Well, then if you put it that way, it's got to be Timmy Cahill, hands down.
Yeah.
Nothing
close.
Nothing close. I'm just saying, hands down, it's got to be Timmy Cahill.
Yeah, because if you look at World Cup, and I'm talking about qualifiers too, Harry Kewell as a 17-year-old scored against Iran within two or three games of his debut. I mean, that's the quality he had. But he didn't get the opportunity to go to a lot of World Cups. He ended up going to 2006 and scoring the clutch goal against Croatia. And I reckon Harry... And Timmy, if Harry got more World Cups and he was fit in more World Cups and at his best, I think Harry and Timmy would be up there together. But given that Timmy's been the four, he scored cracking goals at each one and important goals. Remember the Japan in the last 10 minutes, he scored two crackers. It was a lifesaver there. I still remember being in the stadium in 2010 where he scored over the top of Vidic of Serbia, jumped over the top of him, scored with a header, and we ended up beating Serbia 2-1 in that game. We saw the game against Holland in the last World Cup, the goal that reverberated around the world, that goal. I just think the important, and by the way, in these playoffs too against Syria, it just keeps on coming up and scoring these valuable goals, and I'm not even including the Asian Cup, some of the goals he scored there.
Yeah, well, if we look at it that way, hands down, no one could argue the fact, because it's just understanding what the question is, I guess, the criteria. If we're talking Socceroos and achievements with the Socceroos and what he's done and how long and he's still going and he's making this big move now, and he announced it yesterday that he's leaving Melbourne City, you know, like – he's thriving, and I think, you know, that's a testament to the guy anyway, because he wants to keep achieving.
And the and if you look back to his history, I believe, because remember Frank Farina was much maligned as a coach of Australia, but he did oversee Australia's 3-1 win over England in England. That's number one. And secondly, he fought hard to make sure that Tim Cahill could play for Australia. Remember, he was tied to Samoa. Mm-hmm. And I think Tim Cahill started playing for Australia around the age of 24, 25 years old. So he started quite late. And look what he's achieved. It's just incredible what this guy has achieved. Now, I'm not going to throw you under the bus again, David, and ask you who the best Australian player is. That is another that's another show completely. But let's take a break, mate. I just love talking to you about this sort of stuff. Let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to get your opinion about who should be the next Socceroo coach. Should it be an Australian or should it be a foreigner? And I want to get the good oil from Alan Davidson here on Football Extra on FNR Football Nation Radio.
FNR Football Nation Radio. Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24/7. It is FNR Football Nation Radio live across Australia. It is Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego and Australian football legend Alan Davidson in the studio. Now, Davo, the Socceroo coach, we've got to pick one. Apparently the deadline, or the self-imposed deadline, is in February. They've picked a council or a panel of players and all sorts of people in this panel to help select this this new coach. Mark Bresciano, who you spoke about glowingly before. We've got Stan Lazaridis, who, I don't know if you played. Did you play with Stan?
No.
No, you just
became too old.
Great Socceroo, Stan Lazaridis. And Mark Swartz, one of our best ever Socceroos. They're on the panel. Of course, I think Ante Milicic is on there. Luke Casserly, the head of performance there at the FFA. And I think Eric Abrams, who's like the technical director of football in Australia, and a couple of other people. But really, the three major ones there are Bresch, Lazaridis and Swartzer. Given that they made a name for themselves and became really, really great professionals overseas, and I know Stan came back and played a little bit with Perth Glory, but Mark Swartz has never come back to play, and Mark Bresciano never came back to play in the A-League. There was a sense that as much as they respect everything that's going on here, that things are better overseas, and that's where their life was all about in football. Given that those three people and what we know about them and where they forged their careers, is it guaranteed it's going to be a foreign coach?
Well, I think that if it's going to be a local coach, the first people you wouldn't bring in, you know, like listen, firstly, the three names, you know, Swartzer, Bresciano and Lazaridis, there's a wealth of knowledge there and experience as well. So I don't think anyone can complain with the candidates and the ones they've selected. With Luke and then that's and Auntie's been involved with the national team, so he understands the structure. Luke's behind the scenes doing the structure. So, you know, the people, for me, the whole thing's about getting the right person. So there's going to be a number of coaches, I'm sure, that will be throwing their names in the ring, you know what I mean? And now they've got to go through the lists. But at the same time, I'm pretty sure that they know who they want. They have their – I would think they'd have their – the group would have been discussing it already and who's out there. It's not about, listen – the job's there. Let's see. We'll throw out the net and see what we catch. But also, I think they also would have had the approach that who would be the best person for the job at this stage. And they might have different criterias. You know, they might be saying, we want a foreign coach because he can. We've had an Australian coach with and Ange has brought in a free-flowing, attacking game, and it's been very entertaining. And Ange came in at a very, very difficult time. He rebuilt the squad, introduced all these young players, and now there's all these number of players that have played for Australia and still introducing younger players. So, and they're international now and they're playing overseas in Europe. So, you know, he's done his job, he's moved on. Now they're trying to find, you know, the best coach. I think that's, you know, the best coach to take the role and understand all these criteria that have partaken.
But do you think that there's enough people on that panel, one or more, that would advocate for an Australian coach? And I know you might say, well, if the guys are there and they'll actually sit back and they'll make the right decision, I'm hoping that'll happen. I hope that they do consider an Australian coach as much as they would consider a foreign coach. I know that what they have to consider, and they've told, look, who's the best coach, and they will consider Australian coaches. But at the same time, there could be that bias towards a foreign coach, and therefore the likes of Tony Popovich and Graham Arnold may not really be seriously considered because of that.
We can speculate, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, I think it's going to go on merit, you know what I mean? And I think with Graham Arnold, he's been involved in the national team, and with also the one thing that I think that the big plus from Ange came out was his importance of being Australian and also being a Socceroo. You have to be Australian and you've got to be a Socceroo to understand that.
Yeah.
So the pride and all that sort of stuff. So that's something maybe that a foreign coach can't bring into the mix, which is a big thing.
Well, Jonathan Howcroft was from the Garden Australia, comes in on a Wednesday here. He said that he doesn't understand why national teams go for foreign coaches. If Australia are going to win games at the top level, why can't we all be Australian? Why can't everyone in that squad, players and non-players, coaches and other staff, they should all be Australian, shouldn't they?
I think if if the coach is Australian and he's got the credibility and he's got the experience and he can do the job, and then I agree. But I guess, with the throwing in the European mix, these coaches are coaching in top leagues, top countries, and bring a different taste to the, maybe they feel that, I don't know, I'm only talking out loud now. Mm. I'm only thinking that if, we've had the Australian coach and he's done well, do we follow on with that Australian coach, or let's try to introduce another? Where is Football Australia going with the direction of their philosophy, and what are they talking about? How do we want to implement our game? The Dutch have had a big influence in Australian football. The curriculum's come out. I don't know. It might be deeper than that. Luke Casley, that's his area. Do you know what I mean? And he might be thinking, they're trying to link the national team and where Australian football's going, and they're looking for a big name. Gus Hiddink got a lot of praise for his small tender.
But there wasn't any legacy there with Gus. I mean, in the end, there was a great performance by the boys. We got to the knockout stages. We really should have beaten Italy. And if you speak to a number of players who played in that game or in that squad, they blame Gus why we didn't beat Italy. Because against 10 men, we weren't attacking enough. We had a lot of the ball, but that's what he concentrated on. He never really had the faith in the boys that we could beat someone like Italy. It was all, what the guys could achieve and surprise him. And a few of the guys felt that because he wasn't Australian, he really didn't have faith. By the way, they did applaud what he'd done with the squad, but because he wasn't Australian, he really didn't have faith in that team to go on and beat a team like Italy.
The question I ask is, if he was with the Dutch national team, would he have gone out or done the same thing?
No, because I believe he would have had faith in those players to go at the Italians in an attacking fashion, and having faith in those players to go off and beat the Italian team in that circumstance.
Okay,
that's why I'm only watching from afar. This is just some players I've spoken to, and it wasn't universal. And some of these players aren't,
And they would know. They would know firsthand because they're in there with him.
Yeah.
These are the arguments I guess will always be thrown on the table. Do you know what I mean? I remember when Jason was called up with Holger, and Holger was still looking after all the older players. Because they were the ones who were playing in Europe, or they were the ones that had the names. And, and that's where I got a lot of admiration for Ange, because he came in and just went And like he does pretty much everywhere he goes, he gets rid of, you know, a lot of the senior players, bring all the new young ones in. And one thing with the young players, the one thing is that you're always guaranteed is hunger. They've got the hunger, you know, they've got the running power, a hunger and drive to, and sometimes that counterweights the opposition as well.
And he doesn't stick with them blindly either. He'll give them a real good go. He'll bring them in, but if you're not either playing for your club or not performing, he drops you off. And so it's not like he brings them in and you're blindly kept in the squad forevermore.
No, I understand that probably better than anyone. But the thing is, that I look at the admiration from what he's done in the task as opposed to these foreign coaches. We've mentioned Gus Sidink, we've mentioned Holger. And, you know, they haven't really changed much. You know, I know I talk at first hand from Holger's point of view because Jason was in that. He gave him the opportunity in that. But it was really, you know, really maybe the dream generation of, but at older, you know, at 30, you know, plus, you know what I mean? So I don't know. I you know, definitely Australia, FFA, you know, I'm sure they are aware of what you know, the great achievements of Tony Popovich, what he's done and how he's achieved with his club level and Asian champions and all that sort of stuff and what he can do. There's 100% they know what Graham Arnold can achieve, and maybe they are at the top of the tree. We don't know. But throwing out the net now, and when you bring in this panel, it's a football panel and they've got a lot of experience and football knowledge. It doesn't mean they're not discounting the Australian coaches. We just took, you know, the impression is that people just think that it's going to be a foreign coach. It still could be the Australian coaches. But at the same time, I think they've got to do their due diligence and they've got to have a look at what else is out there. And they weigh it up once all the figures and all the, you know, the information's on the table, and then it's a lot more easier to discuss and to put people above each other. And, you know, then there's other factors that come in, you know, the personal issues, or there might be salaries or budgets or, you know, time frames or whatever, and how they can be there or not be there or whatever. It's total commitment, you know. So that's one thing we know that we'll get from the Australian coaches. We'll get total commitment. And these are all the, I guess, the logistics have got to go through once you might have a short list of five.
Yep. The two that are ready, I believe, to be considered. I don't think Kevin Muscat's ready yet. He could be maybe in the next rotation, but not right now. I think Kevin Muscat's got a lot of upside, and I think he's a guy that is doing enough to really be competitive for a position down the track. But right now, I'm looking at a Tony Popovich and a Graham Arnold.
Yep.
From what you know of those two and what they've done in the game, from a coaching perspective, and even from a playing perspective, it's important too, because that's part of their background. Who would you go out of those two? I'm not saying you're disrespecting the other picking them, but
I think both of them achieved exceptionally well. You know, like to pick one or the other. You know, both of them have been, you know, good. The most important thing, they've been outstanding Socceroos. The other thing is they've both coached overseas. They've got that experience. They know Australian football very well. They know Australia. They've obviously, because they've been living in Australia while the last campaign is going through, so they've got a vast knowledge of the players. And they've both been on the big stage. They've both been Socceroos, like I said. You can't separate one for the other. For me, you know, like Tony Popovich, you know, he's achieved, you know, starting off club, if you want it, because it was a very young club, Western Sydney Wanderers, and then he's gone to win the Asian Cup, which is huge. It's like probably, you know, if you put it in club terms, it's like to win the World Cup.
Absolutely,
you know?
and the club not being really ready to win it by then.
Absolutely.
It was way before time.
That's
that
what
they
I'm
won
saying.
That.
It was a very new club, and, you know, and he was a developing coach and starting off. You know, I'm not saying that he's not a coach. I'm just saying it was his first, you know, professional gig, I guess, in some ways. And then, you know, within years, he's won the Asian Cup, you know. So that's huge. Graham Arnold's been consistently a great ambassador for for the code of, you know, of the A-League, and, you know, he's done well. He was at Central Coast Mariners and, you know, setting, getting involved, you know, and did well there. And then obviously with what he's done with Sydney FC now, you know, he's at his prime as well in terms of, you know, what else can he do?
Does it matter that Tony Popovich hasn't been part of numerous World Cups under foreign coaches and been there through, I think, three World Cups? I think Graham Arnold was at three World Cups and seen the battles and seen the way the foreign coaches came in, especially Gus Hiddink. I mean, Graham Arnold was there in 2006.
Yeah, I think Graham's got probably got a leg in the door with what he's had, the experience he has with Gus Hiddink and being an assistant coach. Do you know what I mean? And I think he was caretaker coach with the Socceroos at one stage.
2007
well.
Yeah. Asian Cup, but that went pear shaped. A lot of the players really turned on him in that tournament, and Graham Arnold turned on the players at the end, basically saying they didn't want to be there, and some of the behaviours weren't all that good.
I think, you know, I think Graham's evolved, matured, and he's become a football coach. You know what I mean? So those maybe issues, you know, at the start and when he it was his first time, maybe as the head coach, and he had expectations as an ex-Socceroo. He had expectations, and we don't know. You know, maybe there was a breakdown of communication. But I, you know, looking at what Graham's done now with the Socceroos, with club level and within the A-League, you know, obviously he's overcome those issues. And, it's very hard to discount one or the other. They've both achieved and they've both played at very good levels as well, so high levels as well. Mm. So, you know, the other thing is that, you know, there's been a lot of speculation now with this panel. And, you know, it could be a foreign coach too. So.
That's right. Oh, but I'm just talking about these two because, by the way, this is our own self-imposed panel, me and you, David. We're making a decision on this. And I'm ruling out all the foreigners. I'm just talking about Graham Arnold and also Tony Popovich.
Yes.
Let's look at the personalities. Mm. Graham Arnold's a better salesman. Like in the media, he handles himself better. He's got he knows the grabs to use. He knows what will get reported. And he seems like he's bred real competition for places with good players at Sydney. He's been able to get a big squad that is willing to play, even if they're on the bench. Of course, they're not happy, but managed it really well. Tony Popovich appears to be a guy that is intense every day. It's like you come in, if you have your skin folds, if you're a bit out, you're not going to play. He's really black and white in that respect. He's been known as a defensive coach, which is no surprise because he was a defender himself, a really high-quality defender, played in Japan, played overseas, played for the Socceroos. The idea that a more defensive coach who is still evolving as a manager who will develop attacking teams. That's Tony Popovich, who's intense, who's not great in the media. He's not one of these guys. If you thought Ange Postecoglou was a bit testy with the media, Tony Popovich is even more testier, I believe. So, what does this squad need? Where this squad? I mean, the Golden Generation needed a certain coach. I think they needed Gus Hiddink at the time. This squad, what do they need as a coach?
Well, whoever the coach is has got to be a leader, and he's got to be seen. And when I say a leader, he's got to earn the respect of the player as soon as he walks in the door. So I believe both Graham and Tony fill those shoes. Mm. I guess the thing is now their man's management skills, how they both continue on, and you're saying that Graham's obviously with what he set up and with Sydney FC is has shown that already. You know, I can't talk about Tony or Graham in that regard because I don't know. Tony's still moving in the right direction, I guess. You know, he's overseas coaching, and that's another feather in his cap. Mm. And I'm sure he's going to get a lot of experience and a lot of he's going to learn a lot. So, yes, you know, to ask one or the other, you know, it sounds like for me, the way you're putting it to me, Graham Arnold's got a lot more you talk about the smarts and dealing with the press. At the end of the day, I understand. For me, it's all about results.
Yeah,
but and getting the results with the team and the man's management skills.
Because I would think what comes into question is not only who the best coach is right now, but who's the best coach for this group of players where they are in their development. It's this mix of it's actually quite a young team. From what I gather, it is a team that's mostly in its 20s. Some of the guys are early 20s, some of the guys are a little bit later 20s, but most of them are sort of the mid-20s, except for Timmy Cahill and Mille Jedinak, who are in their 30s. Most of them are in that 20. So I'm just wondering what sort of coach. I think you almost need the Golden Generation, for example. They were guys who knew how to play. They had confidence in their ability to play in some of the top teams around England and Europe, and they were confident. They were playing against big players all the time. So they came into the camp wanting to know that they had a coach that can come in at halftime, we've got a problem, who can solve the problem, but not teach me how to play, because I know how to play. Where we've got now younger guys who are still learning how to play. Even Aaron Moy's getting better and better every day, but it's not like he's a finished product yet. So I'm just wondering whether you have a teacher, a bloke who can help the progression of these players while they're playing for Australia in big games. That sort of person. It's not like you've got to instill confidence in these guys. It's more a teacher who can get the best out of them. And I'm not sure out of Graham Arnold or Tony Popovich which one's the best, because Tony Popovich is, from what I hear, and I could be completely wrong, is a really tough taskmaster who can get the best out of finished players, but sometimes not the best for the younger guys, because there's so much pressure, they're almost not developing.
Mm.
But that's just—I'm just throwing it out there. This is our panel.
I'm listening. Yeah. I'm not saying anything. I'm just listening. You know that. Well, if you throw it in that category, well, that's maybe why they might be looking overseas.
Yeah. Mm.
I think.
Yeah. If you more know, that teacher.
Well, if they're looking overseas and they're following your description, you know, they might be looking for the you know, once you open up the and I don't know this, but once you open up the world map and then see how many coaches are unemployed, and then you start looking through them and you find out that you're so-and-so.
But then the problem I have is if they're looking long-term, none of these foreign managers will be long-term. They'll be on this World Cup rotation. They'll have a contract till there. But what I'd like to see is if you're going to pick an Australian, give him this World Cup like Ange got, and then give him the Asian Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Give him that. Because otherwise, you know, it's just all short-termism. We got to go on the journey with Ange Postecoglou. The players got to go on the journey. Now, if Ange failed, he would have been sacked. But he didn't fail. He's hit every mark. Okay, we went a bit longer with our World Cup sort of path, a couple of extra playoffs and things like that. But he actually got us to where we were supposed to go. And the players came along. That's what's disappointing for me, because, you know, it's incomplete with this mob going to Russia. But that's what makes it such a great talking point about who is best for this group. And it's not just the biggest name. Who is best for this particular group in the stage of development they're at? That's the question I ask.
You know, if you ask me my opinion, I've always been a fan and an advocate of an Australian coach, full stop.
Yep.
I've been under foreign coaches in the national team. And, you know, do they have the heart and soul that the Australian coach have or players have? They come here to do a job. It's just a job.
In your experience, yes or no, do they have the heart and soul? Do they have...
No.
No. And that's the problem I have.
That's the bottom line. Yeah. I've experienced it.
That's
I've
right.
seen it.
That's
and they,
right.
And they just... It's a job, they move on, and they just take another job.
Yeah.
When you're the national coach, for me, Ange has taken this job on with his heart and soul, and every result, good or bad, it's a knife in the heart, whichever way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So, but, you know, that's us as our panel.
Yeah. Davo, we didn't achieve anything except for discussion there, which is great. Let's take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to quickly get you, only 3 or 4 minutes when you get back, but I want to ask your opinion about our World Cup group, Russia 2018. This is Football Extra with Australian football legend Alan Davidson here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
FNR Football Nation Radio. Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24-7, this is FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful, beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego, and I've spent another wonderful hour with one of the legends of Australian football, Alan Davidson, in the studio. Davo, I know I've been grilling you as part of our coaching panel here, a selection panel. Let's spend the last couple of minutes talking about Australia's group. We've got France, Denmark and Peru in our group for Russia 2018. What's your general feeling looking at that group?
I don't think it's a bad group. I don't think there's, you know, we always talk about the group of death. For me, the group of death was Holland, Spain, and Chile.
I know.
Now, that was a group of death.
That's got to be the worst group anyone's ever received in the history of the World Cup, I reckon.
Well, for me, that was the group of death. Yeah. And the kids did well, and Ange did well, you know. Yeah.
Just a question, because I know you knew a couple of, of course, your son Jason. We've got Matthew Leckie, a couple of other young guys playing in that. When they first saw that group, were they petrified? Were they happy? How did they react to a group like that?
Well, I can tell you what Jason said. Jason said to me, because I turned around and said, gee, look at the group. Bloody hell, you know? And his response was, that's fantastic. We're playing against the best players in the world. That's what we want to do. We want to pit ourselves against the best and see where we are. Yeah.
You'd worry. Do you reckon the older players, because they've been around the block a bit and they've played against these top players like Weeking, they'd be more worried than the younger players?
They probably think a bit. They probably have a bit more respect, because you've got to remember all these younger players, they don't know what the experience is yet.
That's right.
They have to wait till they play him to get that experience. But that was Jason's response. He was looking forward to it because he thought, listen, we're playing against the best players in the world. Mm. Can't get better than that. And we're going to the World Cup. And let's roll the dice and see how we go.
And the guys played like that, I've got to say. Even though we didn't win a game, I thought they were really terrific in both the Chile game and also the Dutch game. Of course, Spain, everyone was completely out of fuel tickets at that stage. But really quickly, we only got a minute, David. What do you think? It's certainly not the group of death, but
I don't think it's the group of death, you know. Like, I don't think there's a real group of death in that regards, you know. Maybe Portugal, Spain, Morocco, two teams, Portugal and Spain, maybe, you know what I mean. But let's not discount, you know, it's the World Cup. Everyone's going to the World Cup to be successful, so you know, they're, you know, France, Peru and Denmark are football nations, you know what I mean. So let's not take the foot off the accelerator here. Mm. Let's, you know, even though it might not be the group of death, we've still got, you know, France is a very, very strong football nation, you know, great league. Peru, South American, you know, and Denmark's been a country where they've always excelled and done well in local and having international stars. Mm. So, you know, it's not going to be an easy group. It'll be interesting, but I think it's within our grasp, I guess. If we had to pick two teams to go through, that'd be interesting. Maybe we shouldn't do that.
We'll do it next week. I reckon France can afford to play poorly and still win. They're good enough for that. But Denmark, Peru and Australia have to play well, I reckon. If those three teams don't play well, they won't win, because they're not, they don't have the ability to win at that rarefied level if they're not playing well. That's what I believe. So it's all about us playing well.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we have to be firing on all cylinders.
Yep.
And I agree with what you're saying. You know, it comes back to maybe their world-class players and how many they have. But again, I don't think, I agree with you totally. We have to. In our group, we have to make sure that we're firing and we're playing well, and hopefully one of the teams have a bad day. And also a little bit of luck, hit the ball, you know, hits the inside of the post, not the outside of the post, you know, so there's other factors.
Well, Tommy Juric drives me mad when that happens, when I think about Honduras and the hit the post twice in the same phase of play. But, Davo, great talking to you again, mate. As always, we've got all these topics to go through, but in the end, we only tick off two, but we'll talk more next Thursday. But thanks for joining us today.
All right.
That's Alan Davidson, Australian football legend, joins us here on Football Extra every Thursday. Riveting conversation with Davo every week. And that brings an end to Football Extra for today. You can podcast the show on iTunes and SoundCloud.com. And you can join with us again tomorrow in our Football Extra hour. Until then, may you have a great day in football.
Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego and Luis Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.